You're now listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, broadcasting from sunny Orange County, California. Filmmaker, journalist, and film historian, Paul Booth.
Aloha, welcome to Talking Pictures. You're here with me, Paul Booth, and my co-host, Mrs. Kai Lovell. We're going to be discussing this film titled Waikiki, which premiered a couple days ago at the Urban World Film Festival, which is sponsored by HBO. The film's title is Waikiki. We got to see it as part of a virtual film festival, and it was a really great film. We're going to go into some of the great things about the film and then some of the tougher things that the film brought up, since Kai and I are from Hawaii. Kai still lives in Hawaii. And yeah, so I just want to let you guys know to be for kids under 16, but I don't want to be hiding anything about the history. So jumping into it, this was a really fantastic film. Everything about it, the cinematography, the pacing, the performances were brilliant. Waikiki is the first feature film written and directed by a Kanaka Maole, which means Native Hawaiian, Chris Punahana. Okay, thank you. I apologize, Chris. Anyways, I'm sorry, guys. I'm really wrestling with this film. So this wonderful film that was made by Chris, in his quotes, he says, "The Hawaii of my childhood is a world far different than the glossy misrepresentation presented in Hollywood film. The repercussions of colonialism and statehood have left people severed from ancestral land and culture. This has had a profound effect on Hawaiian psychology and self-image. Filmmaking has been his means to process these realities. Leaving behind the touristic image of paradise and island culture, Waikiki tackles the often unspeakable generational trauma of post-colonial cultures through a mixing of genre conventions, experimental storytelling, and perspectives." Before I get into the synopsis, that was could not have been more well put. I was really wrestling with how real this portrayed Hawaii, and it wasn't. All due respect to the films that have shot there that we love, like 50 First Dates and Adam Sandler and Just Go With It, and Alexander Payne and his crew was completely pono with The Descendants, so we're not in any way knocking Hollywood. So the synopsis is, when a Native Hawaiian hula dancer escaping her abusive husband crashes her beat-up van into a mysterious homeless man, she finds herself flung into a surrealistic journey of self-exploration and enlightenment. The director eagerly awaited feature debut breaks down the enduring stereotypical image of paradise we have of Waikiki to review a vulnerable and authentic portrait of indignity. I'll let you start off, Kyle.
Well, thank you so much, Paul. And I just want to thank you for bringing this film to my attention. And to Christopher, or I'm not sure if he goes by Christopher or Chris Kahunahana, I think that this film was so necessary for where we are right now. And I'm just so grateful that it was created. The level of colonialism that Hawaiians or Kanaka Mo'oles have experienced over the last 100 years since the overthrow of Queen Liliuokalani and the sovereign nation of Hawaii, it has left this really deep, just a big, deep cut over the last 130 years, actually. And what we see in the, not to spoil what the film has to offer. It opens up in that very atypical frame of what people want when they come here. Like, when you live in Hawaii, you are going to do one of two things. You're going to work in the tourism industry, or you're going to work in the tourism industry. You know what I mean? Because it's right. At this point, 95% tourism is what supports our islands. We used to be, when the sugarcane plantations were open and we were, like an agricultural hub as well, Hawaiians or Kanaka Maoles used to have the option to be sort of like 50-50. And now it's been in the hula show, you know, at a beautiful resort with a beautiful view and beautiful ambient music, and so relaxing and serene. Just that picture of what people put in their mind when they come to what in their mind is paradise here in Hawaii. I really appreciate that that was just sort of to set the tone and the pace for what is really going on here. Like personally, I work with the homeless community. That's the type of career that I'm in now, trying to be of service to people who have been displaced, and the generational trauma, the mental health illness, the mental health and all of the mental illness that can be found as a result of people being displaced and living paycheck to paycheck and not really having an option or an opportunity to do what is culturally appropriate or like what their rite of passage would usually be to serve their community. It's really left a lot of loose ends in who we are as the host culture here that everyone wants to see and take a picture of when they visit. Like visitors want to talk to a real Hawaiian. Like they're always just like completely blown away when they would speak to me and be like, oh, so you're from here? Wow. And I'd always feel like such a token Hawaiian, you know, like they just want to take a picture of you, sort of like touch you and ask you some questions that are extremely stereotypical. Like, do you live in a hut? Can you read, you know, these types, does everyone surf to school? All these crazy questions that you're like, where is this coming from? But what I really love about what was done with Waikiki is that it does tell the story of what's happened over the last 20 years in Waikiki. Waikiki used to be seedy. Waikiki used to be like, you don't go there after dark. Waikiki was not the Louis Vuitton, Miu Miu, Anasui, Versace that you see today when you go down Kalakaua Avenue. It was very, very different. And the people who are actually from Waikiki were, I mean, if you look at it traditionally, that's where Iolani Palace is, and they were tied to serving the crown or doing some type of ancestral jobs, because each ahupua'a is a land division where you have your own family, your ohana has a kuleana or responsibility to caretake for that area. And so it was a lot of agricultural, all of which have gone since Pearl Harbor was brought in, and once again, the level of colonialism. But what I really appreciated as a female was that it's told from Kea's perspective. Kea is a woman. And one of the things I noticed about Kea's personality is that she was completely clear and completely on when she was speaking Olelo Hawaii, which is the Hawaiian language, and working as a teacher. It is not unheard of. It's actually very common. If you were to talk to people who live here in Hawaii, they have 1, 2, 3, sometimes 4 jobs, because it is very challenging to support a family. The cost of living is very high here. And, you know, rent is very hard to come by because God's not making any more. It's the island. I mean, this thing is sinking into the ocean. It's not necessarily like we're making more land that we can just continue to develop. So even if you live in, you know, like not the nicest neighborhood in the world, you're still paying a premium to live in paradise. I mean, I think the average family in Hawaii is paying about $2,000 a month for maybe a 1-bedroom. And if you live in Waikiki, there's a lot of studios, 1-bedrooms that are going to be, you know, $2,000, $2,500 a month. And if you're just trying to work only to have a roof over your head, you don't even have money for food or electric or any of the things that come along with that. So that was really what I got from what Kahuna Hana was doing with this film. He made another character, a very, very focal character in this film, the island itself. There was a lot of times, and what I mean by that is like how Psycho has Norman Bates' mother, right? And she's not necessarily in the film, but she's absolutely a character in the story. And so to me, right, the landscaping pans that were taken in different places and spaces, I don't know if you felt the same way because you're a Waikiki boy in the sense you went to school there and spent a lot of time there. That was a character in the film, in my opinion. Like the locations, the sacred spaces, the areas that we would have been doing traditional practices, I really appreciated that he included those. And also how important it was to stay in touch and in close contact with your kupuna. There was a lot of very much a nod to who we are as humans. Like Hawaiians, we are so in tune with our kupuna. We are so in tune with our ancestry. In Hawaii, we call it our moku au hau. And, you know, one of the things that you do when you introduce yourself to another person who is Kanaka Mo'ole is you explain your moku ahau, your ancestry, who your family is, where they came from, you know, what your name is, what that means. And I just felt like it's one of the things that we know just by living here, that as you get farther and farther away from being grounded in your cultural traditions and having a place to stay in your own sacred place. I mean, like when you're from Hawaii and can't even have a house in Hawaii or anything, and like your family's sacred land was sold and your family had no say in it. And now you're just sort of like working and smiling for the camera and doing anything you can to make a couple dollars. It is really hard. And you combine that with, challenges of mental wellness and well-being in a very, very harsh and unrelenting environment. Paradise looks a lot different from that perspective. And I found Waikiki very hard to watch because it is very much a story that I'm familiar with. It was like, I know Kea very well. And, you know, what she's going through with domestic violence, going through with trying to find her place and trying to exert independence, even though she feels like there is something wrong. She keeps turning to her kupuna, her ancestors and her land and her dancing and her cultural practices to try to find her footing in her ground. And I think that story needs to be told to visitors. And I really appreciate what was done with this film.
Well, I felt very similar to you on a lot of points, like the use of the location as a character. I obviously was not as in tune with what you just mentioned about you explain your family and your culture, other than just in talking story stuff comes up. I really liked this, and I do not have a bias to it, even though I do know one of the producers and camera operators, Vince, and Connie, the first AD co-producer, who helped set this up and get us screeners to see it, to be able to review it. And so I was able to come into this film. I had heard about it a long time ago, but it wasn't like, oh, okay, I'm going to, you know, I have all this attachment to that. I've been hearing about it for months and I've been counting down the days. So I was able to really walk into it with thought at all. And to me, it was just obviously, it was just so realistic. And something that I had told them was, I think a lot of films sometimes bug me where it's like, you have to live in New York to understand the story, or it could apply to anything. You know, we laugh about Gleaming the Cube, but that's obviously a totally Orange County movie. There's nothing mm-hmm. really poignant about it past that it's just showing you a time and place. But what I liked about this was that this showed a story that could be relatable to anybody, that homelessness, domestic violence, change in town, city and culture is going on in so many places around the world. And I really liked to really take a hard hitting look at it and not pull any punches. I think something that made me kind of lose it, I had to stop the film a couple of times because I was just like bawling my eyes out, was seeing, and this isn't a spoiler because it's the synopsis says that Kea is out and trying to find her way, but seeing some of those buildings by Ala Moana, and even now knowing that Ala Moana is like a 3 or 4 story mall, I remember when there was like a couple of stores and a food court was, so I used to catch the bus in front of Ala Moana to go to school. And so that kind of stuff was really hard for me. And I've had friends who live in Honolulu who tell me like, oh man, you would trip over this. Remember that place. And so I kind of had it in my radar, and it was just totally different to see it. And it kind of was like mm-hmm. looking at an old friend who had, like, I don't know, gotten their ass kicked it was like I could still see Waikiki, but like you're saying, those Louis Vuitton, and to me it looked like the Vegas Strip. I have not been there in 10 years. A date took me there saying, oh, you're just going to love Waikiki, and I really hadn't thought, like, I lived there when it was seedy. I lived there when Dad would say, don't go past, no pun intended, the Princess Kaualani Hotel. Don't go past, you know, the little station where they hold surfboards. And of course, we'd go past anyways to see what he was talking about. And you don't go on the Alawai side of Waikiki. And so for me, it was just once they started showing those images of how much it had changed, it was just really. And again, this film is not a downer. Like, I don't want you guys, I don't want anyone to take this as we're knocking the film. To me, this makes the film better. And it has more power to it because it's, you know, it's dead on. And I said something, I don't know if I put it in the synopsis, but I was telling a couple of the producers today, I said, you know, I'm really tired of how in the last few years, like, there's been this underlying saying that art has to be pretty and it can't ruffle anyone's feathers. And so I love that this film was just willing to, and this isn't their opinion or what they were saying, it's my opinion, but I felt like the film was like so punk rock that it was willing to just say, like, you know what, it's time to just say how this place looks. And it's time to just say what people are doing to our home. Like, we're not going to come here and make it look pretty. I couldn't believe, Kai, I mean, not from a technical standpoint, but with me, the cinematography was so brilliant. How did this come across to you, where like the darkness felt exactly how dark Waikiki is when you walk around?
Yes, I really loved the shots of Chinatown. You know, that feels exactly how it feels to be in Waikiki at night. It really does. Like, right, in the Waikiki that I'm used to, you know. Don't get me wrong, we've gone over and enjoyed some of the new things that come along with all this fanciness and this gentrifying that's happened in Waikiki. But you want to go to restaurants and, you know, like, I have friends that live like in these apartments in Chinatown, you know, so you go visit your friends and your loved ones. And it really does feel like that. And the bridge that they shot, one of the key scenes in when they were in Waikiki at night, is right now filled with people who are houseless, and that community of people who are from Hawaii originally. And, you know, it's just sort of like it's grown up around them. And before they knew it, they were put out on the street, literally and figuratively, you know. So powerful film. I'm so grateful that it's told from a female's perspective, because it lends this whole other level of what it is to be a human in Hawaii at this time. The amount of domestic violence that is found amongst couples, young couples of you know, Hawaiian descent, local descent, it's mind-blowing, the amount of domestic violence that we see. And I think it has a lot to do with just the pressures. There's so many pressures. Many times families live multi-generationally because you can't afford to live on your own. And and then just always having to have that pretty picture of like the hula dancer in the lights, exactly the way that people want to see it, the visitors when they come. Just like the same thing, we don't ever have any bad news in our newspaper. Like, if you come to Kauai, you'll see that Kauai's newspaper is like a few pages at best. And like, the closest to bad news will be like, there was a power outage on Kauai, and the reason was because a chicken got stuck in the mainframe. You know, like, it's so dumb. And there's all types of crime and drugs and abuse and crazy things going on, but they just don't print it because it's not good for business and we're a tourism-based economy. And so that is, it's a challenge when you're living in this world and you see things as they are, but the rest of the world refuses to acknowledge it. It's very much like the overthrow, and it's very much like colonialism, and it's very much like what it is that people sort of have been forced to deal with, you know?
Right. For me, I was, the thing that really hit me hard with Kea was, as you kind of says in the synopsis, this is about the effects of colonialism. So it's not a spoiler to say that the characters are kind of engulfed in the subtext of what Hawaii used to be. And what kind of set me off was I didn't realize that I had kind of taken what Waikiki was to me, which was just where I lived in high school, and was one of the first places I obviously went to in Hawaii, because you stay in Waikiki when you land in Hawaii. And that I was kind of going through, you know, I'm blessed to not be homeless and such, but that it kind of pulled this scab off of me that I had kind of like buried the Waikiki that I loved, of like walking around with my buddies and going to Fun Factory and, you know, being stupid 15-year-olds and, you know, trying to talk to college girls. And I'm not being disrespectful here, but just those things that are your, whatever your memories are of Waikiki. So to add to it, the loss of culture. I mean, I was literally crying. I had to stop the film, and I literally called one of the producers, and I was just like, I'm having trouble finishing your film. And because I had just noticed how much this has gone on and for how long, and that was like 25 years ago, just sort of think that it was a century or more, and that I'm not having to deal with my grandmother and my great grandmother and wherever the initial seed that I'm come from is involved with these things, kind of just sent me over the edge. Also, I want to say, and I mean this with no racial connotation, no ethnic, especially at these times, but another hard thing for me was, it was the first time ever, and we've talked about this, Kai, so I'm really going to pull this opinion from It's Not Yours, but it was the first time ever where I understood the like go home fucking howly thing. And nobody I know behind this thinks that way. And so I'm not even gonna, like this. So I know the intent of the film is not that. But for me, having had such issues with that for so long, that it was like the film kind of just like, it was like this full circle moment. It was like, you were this kid, everyone was saying to go home because you're part of colonialism. But I moved there so young that I am from Hawaii and so I'm local. And for those that don't know, there's two types of, there's Hawaiian by blood and then there's local, which means you stayed long enough to where everyone knows you're not a dipshit. So you're from Hawaii.
Well, so you contribute. I guess Pono's like good. If you take care and you contribute and you participate in culture and you participate in supporting the environment and you participate in your community, I mean, there's no question about what your intentions are. I think it's like, you know, so many people move to Hawaii and then they want to change it. Like, oh, this is perfect, other than, oh, this is amazing, except, oh, it would be even better if this. And like, here we are. Like, Waikiki is the perfect example. What you see today is all the people who moved there and were like, oh, it'd be so much better if this, you know? Like, that's, to me, right. That's the difference between, like, if we're going to say it, like, if we're going to say holidays and we're going to say, like, who is a holiday and who isn't, like, you can be anything. But whatever race you are, if you come in and you like it for what you like about it, but you want to switch everything up and you don't pour into the community and you don't pour into the people and you don't pour into the land and you just sort of take advantage of all of these things and these resources, you're a holiday. You suck. You need to dig. Like, that's kind of what it is.
Right. Well, you're the more so, a Hawaiian friend of mine, an activist one time, we were just laughing about it because he always calls me Caucasian. And I just asked him one day and he just said, you know, there's for so many people, he said, nobody gets that Haole is not a thing or a race or a culture. He said, Haole is an attitude.
100%.
And so, like what you just said, and I'd never heard it put that way. And I was 25. So that was 15 years into being a resident, where I was just staring at him. He's like, no, he's like that. Why do you? And it was kind of a joke. He's like, you said you would be hanging out with us, like if you had that attitude. And I was sitting around with a bunch of, you know, activists and like full on Hawaiian guys that just spend 90% of their time talking about how Caucasians need to leave. So it was, to me, it was like a big rite of passage. So I was watching this film and just thinking like, oh my gosh, now I am. understanding the attitude, you know, seeing the buildings and seeing that those buildings, that somebody's put in a 30-story building and that they have people sleeping in the park across the street, you know, like not even that you could just be like, I have enough money to put in a 30-story building and I can just afford to have 2 stories be for the homeless people to have some snacks, you know, and I'm not getting into the whole debate and I don't want to get off course on that, but
I feel like that's what this film brings up though, like that's the scab that you start to sort of like you yank off the band-aid and you're really taking a look at how it's healing up and it's pretty deep and it's still pretty like moist and it could get infected. Like that's what this film does, is it sort of like opens up your eyes, like take the bandage off, take a good look at her, and what are some things, another thing that I feel like was good about it is like what are some things we can do to make it better, like and that just boils down to like each person doing their very best community to leave things better than they found them, if at all possible, people, places, and things. And, you know, a few times I've driven through Waikiki in the last few years, and there are really, truly people standing in front of these statues of Queen Liliuokalani and Princess Kaʻiulani and, you know, King Kalakaua, how when Kia's walking through the city and she's just super despondent and she's trying to get a place, you know, she's literally bathing and getting ready in a public bathroom and making herself pretty, which is such a part of being a local girl, especially if you're in the entertainment industry and you're a dancer, you have to look a certain way. But she doesn't have any way to do that other than bathing at the beach, brushing her teeth at the beach, and then getting into a public restroom that you can lock the door so she can get herself ready for the day. And then ending up in front of these statues of our ali'is that, you know, the whole purpose of an ali'i and the reason why we loved our ali'is is the ali'is took care, which are our kings and queens, they took care of the people. You know, they created opportunities and resources for the people who lived in Hawaii to prosper. And that I just felt like that was such a beautiful frame. Those are beautiful frames to be caught. And I really appreciate what was done with this film. I thought it was beautiful. I got an opportunity to look into, you know, Kahuna Hana's mind. And I appreciate where he's coming from. And his mo'olelo and his story is very much a part of our culture. You know, we are a spoken culture. We are the kind that dance and chant and create songs, meles and oles, to tell what's going on. And this is just the most contemporary Hawaiian thing to do, is to take this next type of media to share where we are. This is the new part of the mo'olelo, or the story. And I just was very touched by it.
Well, myself as well. And as we go into the wrap, I'll make a Ty's like a boxer. She's like 8-0 with coming up with the perfect way to end the review. So I'm actually going to say that does it for me, because I'm just going to respect the fact that I'm too upset to continue on, and I don't need to be saying things that have nothing to do with the wonderful film that we looked at. You guys can support the film. Follow www.waikikithefilm.com. And also the info they've given me here is they're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So please follow that. Again, this was the world premiere, so I don't specifically have info for you that's like a VOD or DVD. But this film is definitely going places, with all bias aside. So we want to make sure that you write it on your list. Keep an eye out for it. And we'll be supporting this film in the future. So if you want to check back with us, we'll have some kind of update. So that's going to do it for me. Do you have any final words, Kai?
Yes, I do. I would just say that, Paul, I think what's beautiful about your relationship with Waikiki, the place, is that it is that special time in your life. And, you know, those memories are dear. And I think that that's really where everybody is met with this film. If you've ever had a relationship with Waikiki, or if you've ever dreamt of it because of what you've learned from, you know, pictures and magazines and books and stories and movies, it just sort of meets you where you are, so that it pulls on your heartstrings, and then it allows you to see where she is currently. And I just, once again, it's really, it's worthwhile, and everyone who has an opportunity to see it should.
right, excellent. Well, that's going to do it for us. We thank you for joining us as always. And you know, my motto, whether it's morning, afternoon, evening, or whatever other time of crazy COVID day it is, make sure and watch a good movie. Aloha.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, real conversation and movie-induced inspiration.